Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us from Uncle John's Bathroom Reader, Plunges into Music. Question number one. Back in 1873, a poem was converted to a song that was published in local newspapers. Which state adopted this song, Home on the Range, as its official state song back in 1947? Was that A, Idaho, B, Kansas, C, Oklahoma, or D, North Carolina? Home on the Range. Which state made this their state song in 1947? And question number two, in the 1950s, when rock and roll began to monopolize the charts, Lawrence Welk waltzed into American living rooms and remained the premier proponent of politeness and polka for the next 30 years. Which of the following statements is true about this famous accordion bandleader? Was it A, he didn't learn to speak English until he was 21? Is it B, his show sponsors included Geritol and Aquavelva? Was it C, he had a number one hit in 1961 called Calcutta? Or is it D, all of the above statements are true facts about Lawrence Welk? So what is the truth, anyway, about this famous entertainer? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com. And today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of July 18th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1995, that the oldest known musical instrument in the world was found in the Idrijska River Valley in Slovenia. This 45,000-year-old relic was a bare bone with four artificial holes along its length. Oldest known musical instrument today, discovered 1995. And it was 65 years ago today, 1960, that Hank Ballard and the Midnighters released The Twist. The song didn't become a hit until later in the year when Chubby Checker recorded it. Hank Ballard's Twist today in 1960. Dolly Parton's Jolene introduces our country music news. It's titled The Enduring Magic of Dolly Parton's Jolene. In her book titled Dolly Parton's Jolene, Professor Lydia R. Hammersley offers an entertaining analysis of the song and its legacy. This is published on July 7, 2025, Washington Post. The review of this book is by Abby Kozolchik. I was raised in Tucson by a classical music fanatic from Cuba and a great American songbook devotee from New York. While other kids' parents might have had at least a passing interest in the music of the day, that day being the 1970s and 80s, mine generally cocooned us in the smooth stylings of Ella Fitzgerald, Vladimir Horowitz, Benny Moré, and other icons of the early 20th century, with periodic exceptions for flamenco, mariachi, and Yiddish classics. So devoid was this soundtrack of any nod to modernity that one of my babysitters, who had been named a special teen correspondent in the local paper, dedicated an entire column to the agony of being stuck in a car while my parents DJ'd. I offered the above as a way of explanation, if not justification, for a grievous lapse. I got all the way to my 40s without knowing who or what Jolene was. Jolene's big debut, first as a single in 1973, then as the title track of Dolly Parton's 13th solo studio album in 1974, had long since escaped me, as had Olivia Newton-John's beloved 1976 cover of that song. I'm not sure how to account for my obliviousness to the 2016 Pentatonix version that went on to win a Grammy. I won't even try. But 2 weeks after the a cappella group released that duet with Paul Dolly Parton, I was heading into a babysitting gig of my own. My friends were visiting for a wedding, and I'd be spending the evening with their toddler, Ellis, who came with special instructions. If he started saying Doween, and he certainly would, he was requesting Jolene. And I was free and encouraged to find videos immediately. The directive was so matter-of-fact, I gathered I should know exactly who Jolene was. Right on cue, Ellis started asking for Doween and wanted very little else for the rest of the night, his fervor only increasing with each rewatch. I dug up every video I could and found that he was especially taken with a 1974 clip with Dolly in bell-bottom jumpsuit and sparkly lilac eye shadow. After dozens of back-to-back viewings, you either swear off Jolene for all eternity or you become a super fan yourself. Now, I'm the kind of person who devours entire books about the song, of which there is, as far as I know, only one. The new Dolly Parton's Jolene, written by Lydia R. Hammersley for the Oxford University Press. The author is a professor at Hamilton College, where she teaches courses on country, medieval, Renaissance, and film music. So the book naturally leans academic. That book, Dolly Parton's Jolene, comes with a website full of meticulously organized music and video clips that you're routinely prompted to listen to or watch. So even if at first you don't understand a particular bit of music theory, you click on the relevant music or video title file, and everything makes sense, or at least entertains you. Such analysis or instrumentation of scales, tempo, form, lyrics, or anything else that varies from version to version is a clear forte of Hemisley's. But there's a lot more to the book, with particularly layperson-friendly sections on the juicy history of the country pop rivalry, surprising new takes on Jolene's commonly accepted backstory, the growing body of answer songs, and the extraordinary gift that Parton has for songwriting. But my favorite section of the book speaks to the improbably wide world of Jolene covers, of which there are hundreds. In the years since that fateful babysitting gig, I found myself obsessed with the idea that this 202-word plea for to a Tennessean temptress not to take my man could become so globally resonant that even Nelson Mandela, when the Robben Island prison guards let him select music to play over the PA system, often chose Jolene. No human being cannot be affected by Jolene. We all don't want to lose. In citing the Mandela example herself, Hemmingsley agrees that the song's outsized power comes at least in part from that universal fear of loss. Not just the loss of a partner, she writes, but the loss of something bigger and more abstract and inevitable. Still, she contends there's something more at play, and it's equally universal: yearning. As I read this section, I happened to be visiting my parents and, on a lark, decided to play Jolene for them. When I asked what they heard in the song, they replied immediately, almost in unison, "Yearning." Duly floored, I realized something in that moment. While they've never strayed from the musical cocoon I was raised in, maybe it was never as airtight as I thought. And in jazz and blues music news, we have this review that's published in the Week magazine, 27th of June 2025 issue. It's a review of Anastasia's new album called Tether. It's given 4 out of 4 stars. Anastasia, a Los Angeles-based singer-songwriter, is a once-in-a-generation vocalist who has been trapped in a bad record contract for 13 years, said Laura Mosby in NME. But with her debut album, the 30-year-old is not only showing the kind of music she's always wanted to make, she's also claiming her rightful place as a pioneer of modern folk, propelling the genre forward by weaving in moments of terse rock and intoxicating blues. Silenced for too long by handlers who steered her in a poplar direction, Anastasia has a lot to say here, all in a husky purr that commands attention even in the sparest arrangements. And on Tether, she balances the sweet, poignant, lyrical observations of Joni Mitchell with the sensuality of Sade's Long Love Deluxe and the immense vocal power of Nina Simone. It's as beautiful a record as you'll hear this year, and it heralds the arrival of a major talent, said Steve Baltin in the Los Angeles Times. Gentle, soft, elegant, and graceful, in a way that calls to mind a female Nick Drake. The album's actually a bold statement to dare listeners to think and feel this much in these tumultuous times. Once again, that's Anastasia's new album called Tether. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, "Music Can Lift Mood, Foster Community, and Even Rewire Brains. But does it need to have a purpose?" The therapeutic role music can play is the focus of a string of new books and even an entire BBC radio station. But why can't we just listen to music for music's sake? This is published in TheGuardian.com by Emily McGregor, 14th of April, 2025. Growing up, I never questioned the intrinsic value of classical music. My father, practicing classical and jazz guitar, was the aural wallpaper to my childhood, and at my rural state school, I took lessons on the recorder, the violin, the cello, the trombone, and the piano. Music was art, and wasn't art the point of it all when you got right down to it? The reason to live after we cater for all of our basic needs. It was certainly what led me to become first a classical musician and then a music historian. But when my dad died unexpectedly in 2019, it threw my relationship with music into sharp relief. All of a sudden, I couldn't bear listening to it. It was too painful, or it grated on my nerves and made me angry. I started to question how and why music mattered to me. And as I learned to care about it again, I started to wonder about the ways in which music might care for me in return. I'm not the only one to have been thinking about this lately. The capacity of music to influence well-being and healing is having a cultural moment. Amid a flurry of new books, Hark, How Women Listen by Alice Vincent, Daniel Levitin's Music as Medicine, How We Can Harness Its Therapeutic Power, soprano Renee Fleming's Music and Mind, Harnessing the Arts for Health and Wellness, the issues have been focused by the debate around the BBC's new station, Radio 3 Unwind, which aims to mobilize, mostly, classical music to enhance well-being. The music it plays is designed to relax us. The station is promoted using wellness-inspired language, promising to help you escape the pressures of modern life. Daniel Levitin argues compellingly in Music as Medicine for the therapeutic benefits of music, among other things, for Parkinson's disease, dementia, and pain perception. He notes the role of music in shamanic healing rituals. These properties of music have long been recognized by human cultures. We all already self-medicate with music. Most people know what in music to reach for when they want to maintain or alter their mood state. For Levitin, however, music isn't separate to us, a thing that can be used to optimize health. It is demonstrably deeply entangled throughout the brain and embedded in our most fundamental human processes across all forms of attention. Music lives inside each of us who listen. He writes, I now get a lot of joy from singing nursery rhymes with a bunch of women and their small children in a community library. From a classic pop patriarchal standpoint, that is not a cool way of making music, Alice Vincent writes. But there's still a community and a resonance. There's an identity with it that feels really powerful. When I came back to music after my father's death, she writes, I found the joy was in creative play, messing around, exploring, bashing something out on the piano. The satisfaction of small improvements, I was lucky that my gateway drug to classical music was music lessons in school. For others, it might be thinking, I'm stressed, help. Where the art for art's sakers and the music for healing camps find common ground is in the idea that as a society, we've lost sight of how important music is. But music is not the icing on the cake of an existence dominated by science, technology, and economics. It's to push a metaphor too far, the rich butter whipped right through the mix. We are aural creatures, reverberating together. The book reviewer here, Emily McGregor, is the author of While the Music Lasts, a memoir of music, grief, and joy. So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, Back in 1873, a poem was converted to a song that was published in local newspapers. Which state adopted this song, Home on the Range, as its official state song back in 1947? Was that A, Idaho, B, Kansas, C, Oklahoma, or D, North Carolina? Correct answer? Answer B, Kansas. As noted in Uncle John's Bathroom Reader Plunges into Music, in 1872, an Indiana doctor named Higley Brewster decided to retire and move west to Smith County, Kansas. There, he penned a poem titled Western Home. People liked it so much that they told him he should set it to music. So he gave the lyrics to Dan Kelly, a member of a Kansas band called the Harlan Brothers Orchestra. The song became a local hit and was published in Kansas newspapers in 1873. But it wasn't the song we know today. It didn't have the words Home on the Range in it. The original words were a home, where the deer and the antelope play. But as the song made its way west, reportedly sung by cowboys, the words gradually changed. In 1910, musicologist John Lomax printed a version he heard in Texas, Home, Home on the Range, and that's the way it's been ever since. In 1947, it was made the state song of Kansas, and today it's one of the best-known American songs of all time. And the answer to our second question, in the 1950s, when rock and roll began to monopolize the charts, Lawrence Welk waltzed into American living rooms and remained the premier proponent of politeness and polka for the next 30 years. Now, which of the following statements is true about this famous accordion bandleader? Was it A, he didn't learn to speak English until he was 21? Was it B, his show sponsors included Geritol and Aqua Velva? C, he had a number one hit in 1961 called Calcutta? Or D, all of the above statements are true facts about Lawrence Welk? And the correct answer is Answer D. All of the above are true. As noted in Uncle John's Bathroom Reader Plunges into Music, around 1918, while he was still a teenager, Lawrence Welk made a deal with his father. If the elder Welk would buy him an accordion, Lawrence would stay on the family farm until he was 21. His father took the offer, and young Welk remained in the rural German-speaking community of Strasburg, North Dakota, until March 11, 1924, the day he turned 21, and off he went to become a musician. Within 3 years, Welk had his own band, the Hotsy Totsy Boys. They played in ballrooms, hotels, and on radio stations across the Midwest. In 1938, according to a legend perpetuated by Welk, a radio listener gushed that the band's music was effervescent like champagne. From then on, his group was known as the Champagne Music of Lawrence Welk. A 1951 late-night appearance on a Los Angeles TV show caused a flood of calls to the station. Welk got his own local show out of it, the Dodge Dancing Party, which ran for 4 years until 1955, when ABC started airing it nationally on Saturday nights as the Lawrence Welk Show. For the first 13 years, a performance by the lovely Lennon sisters was included in that show. At the end of the show, Welk would invite women from the audience to dance with him to the closing theme, Bubbles in the Wine, later Champagne Fanfare. The songs played on his show were light and familiar, a mixture of waltzes, polkas, ballads, standards, novelty songs, and show tunes, many of which were 40 or 50 years old at the time. No rock and no jazz. Audiences loved Welk's wholesome variety of barbershop quartets, ballroom dancers, old-fashioned music, and endless cascades of bubbles. The show, with Welk's traditional phrases, "Ah, one, ah, two," and "Wonderful, wonderful," may not exactly have been pulse-pounding entertainment, but his fans were devoted, and the show maintained high ratings for decades. Not even the network cancellation of the show in 1971 could burst Welk's bubble. New shows were produced for syndication until 1982. By the time of his death in 1992, Welk had amassed a business empire, a music library, resorts in California and Missouri, a home video line, and several record labels. At one point, Welk was the second richest performer in show business, out-earned only by Bob Hope. Not bad for a squeaky clean band leader whose heavy accent often led to memorable mispronunciations, such as the time he wanted band members to be sharp and attentive and told them to, quote-unquote, pee on your shoes. And here are some random Welk facts published in that article. Lawrence Welk didn't learn to speak English until he was 21. Show sponsors included Geritol, Sominex, and Aqua Velva. Welk had a number one hit in 1961, the instrumental song Calcutta. And, finally, this statement by Lawrence Welk about his audience. The farmers come in from their hard day milking the cow and tending the crops, and they want to put their feet up and drink beer and listen to the polkas. So let's close out today's program with one of the hundreds of covers of Jolene. Here's Dolly Parton with the a cappella group Straight No Chaser. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. Program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Content of this program intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on the program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review underwritten by Bill McClure. Tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 68. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time. Jolene, 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 Jolene.